Oh, thank you, Rod. That's such an amazing song. I often think I saw it performed on something like The Voice or something recently, and it made me think, wow, wouldn't it be cool to have written that? Because that's going to last. That's got that some kind of magic in it. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for, I almost said the USA. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm the spiritual leader of this community, and really happy to be here with you today. It's a fun time for me. I'm having such a good time on my relevance project, and writing the Sunday message has taken on a new creative sense of excitement for me. So last week, I delivered a message that was about love and law. We'll talk about that in a little bit, and I'm carrying on with that theme, but you'd never know it if I didn't tell you. So I'm kind of giving you the direct message that you, if you haven't heard last week's talk, it is the substance of which this week's message comes forward. So we're going to be playful. We're going to have some fun with the message today. And still, it stands in that essence of principle that's so important, and I'll be building on it in the weeks to come. So the title of my message is The Looking Glass of Truth. The Looking Glass of Truth. And I found this quote from the founder of this teaching, The Science of Mind, Dr. Ernest Holmes. So these are his words that speak to this idea. This is what inspired me as I put the message together. The law of reflection corresponds precisely to the object held up before a mirror. You cannot keep from attracting into your experience that which corresponds to the sum total of your state of consciousness. The sum total of everything that's in your consciousness, all of your beliefs, all of your ideas, all of your opinions, you put it together, you shake it all up, it is the sum total. And the law of reflection is always reflecting back to you, whatever that is. So as something appears in our life that doesn't please us, this is where we come into, thank you for all the support, the reading, and the even Clyde's messages as he was speaking about sort of his flavor, his take on all of this, is that we can choose again. You don't like a situation, you get to choose again. And everything we do here is about how to choose again, how to step up and get a do-over. You get a free do-over always, again and again. So as I'm looking at that theme of the looking glass of truth, let's talk about, the looking glass is a mirror. So let's talk about what happens when you hold up something in front of a mirror and you look back at it. A few weeks ago, I caught my own reflection in that big mirror back there, and it startled me. But if you hold up something in front of a mirror, you're going to see the reflection in the mirror of exactly whatever it is you're holding up. If you're standing in front of the bathroom mirror in the morning, you're going to see the pure reflection of yourself reflected back to you. Now, what you do with what you see is on you. So sometimes I'm looking in the mirror and I'm going, you got this, girl. Right? And then other times I'm standing and looking in the mirror going, for God's sake, what happened to your hair today? Right? So we've all had bad hair days, so to speak. But what I want to tell you is, we don't influence the mirror. It's just reflecting back what's there, but the eyes that are viewing, and what's behind the eyes in a bigger way, is where the interpretation comes from. So in other words, I could be having a really horrible bad hair day, and I might not mind. Because if I'm clear in the truth about me, if I can see something divine in my being, if I can recognize that, okay, it's just an off day, but there's a greater truth. The truth is, I'm no less perfect today than I was yesterday when I liked myself in the mirror. Then that's going to give me a different view. And that's what I want to talk about in terms of the looking glass. Because you know what we don't think about as often? As that we get the idea of reflection, but you know what we forget sometimes? Is that reflection coming back in the mirror is exactly who I am, except that it's reversed. So if I pick up my hand and I wave to myself in the mirror, it looks like she's waving back at me with the opposite hand. So I'm waving my right hand. It looks like she's waving her left hand. Do you understand? Can you follow? Right? So there's that little thing of reversal, and that's what I think is the key to understanding this statement. I'm sort of making this all up, but the looking glass of truth happens when we recognize there's some reversal in that, and that it's up to us to make a healthy interpretation. It's up to us, if we don't like the way we're interpreting, to take a different position and to stand in some truth and reverse what's going on inside our own mind. So, you know, we talk about this all the time in here. You know, I have given luscious, detailed explanations that talk about the neuroscience behind it and the way science and spirituality are coming together. I've talked about this new whole, all the brain studies and this idea of neuroplasticity. Is that how you say that? Neuroplasticity? I can never remember if it has a T or not. I could do all that, but I'm not going to do all that today. I want to simplify it. Everything I'm going to do today simplifies what I did last week, what I said last week. So if I'm wondering, what can I do about the reflection in the mirror that I'm not happy about? I don't need the scientific explanation. All I have to remember is that's up to me. What I do with what I think I see is up to me, and that is a consistent truth. So the mirror reflects an image, but I can only see what my mind can conceive of. And so it's important for me to figure out what I want to do with everything I think I see going on in the world or in my life or in somebody else's life. Because we do have opinions about that sometimes. So in the term looking glass, Lewis Carroll, who wrote the Alice in Wonderland, the beautiful literature that is so playful, when Lewis Carroll wrote the Alice books, what happened was we began to have that new way to identify with the idea of the looking glass. And if you look up the dictionary definition, it implies a reversal. It implies, whenever you talk about the looking glass effect, it implies a way that we're seeing something opposite of what we expected or opposite of what we define as normal. So in the Alice stories, she looks through the looking glass and she sees that she tries to walk away from something, it brings it closer. I'm not talking physics, I'm talking about the story, the beautiful fairy tale part of the story, imagination. You're running, you run and it helps you to stay stationary. So everything is reversed, and so there's this beautiful lengthy story about all of that. Well, I took those ideas and I created my own definition of what a looking glass of truth really is. The looking glass of truth in Karenism, I made another Karenism, always quite proud of it when I say that. The looking glass of truth reverses the logic of our distorted thinking. So when I feel triggered by something, let's use that as an illustration, and I notice that I'm feeling frustrated, angry, hurt, whatever it is, if I notice that, I now can tap into the spiritual skills, the tools that we are always here to talk about, and I recognize that something is different than I expected it was, but the looking glass of truth is going to help me reverse this by recognizing that my distorted thinking isn't right, that something's off in my perception. Therefore, I always have the opportunity to sort of clean up my act or shift my perspective. So everything we see, you know, on one hand we say, everything we see isn't really quite what we think it is anyhow, but it turns out that this is really good news. This is really good news because we are participating. So if I look in the mirror and it seems like a bad hair day and I tap into the spiritual truth, now I don't magically give myself great hair. because I don't care anymore. It doesn't matter. The fact that my hair didn't do what I wanted it to do doesn't play any part in it, because I am experiencing instead a miracle. And the miracle is the shift in my own perception. That's the definition right out of the Course in Miracles. People used to come to me and go, oh, I need this class because I need a miracle in my life. And I'd always think, they don't understand. That's not what that is. The miracle is in our own ability to use that reversal, that looking glass truth, to change our mind to see a different perspective. So last week, we talked about love and law. That's the main point. We talked about love and law, kind of a difficult concept to understand. I did a really good job defining it. So if you don't remember or you weren't here, you can hear it for free on the website, of course. Or if you want to pop it in your CD player on the way home, your DVD player, you can purchase a copy in the bookstore. But that's a good thing, right? So you always want to support your center. So I talked about love and law. And what I did that was kind of out of the ordinary was I spoke to this idea that we all have a preference. Whether we realize it or not, we probably lean more toward this idea of the divine law as the kind of way we understand God, or we lean toward the love side of understanding spirit. And one is way more linear than the other, and the other side is way more abstract. It's as simple as, remember when we used to, before all this research on the brain, we used to just simply go right-brained and left-brained, that we tend to be, we favor one or the other. So you will show up, if you're right-brained, you're more creative. Is that correct? And if you're left-brained, well, for your benefit, I'm doing this not really because I forgot. If you're left-brained, you're more linear. You like things in order, and you relate to life in that way, and you don't like things as abstract. So each of us, because we are an individualized expression of the divine, we have our own unique way of translating life. And none of it matters, and nobody else on the planet is going to see things quite like you do, including our idea of what God is and how the divine relates to us in our own experience of living. So getting back to the looking glass, I want you to think for a minute of the symbolism behind that idea that we see things sort of backwards. And remember that the truth, the looking glass of truth, will remind us that it's not wrong. This is something we teach here, that something different, or the differences we might see in relationship to ourself as compared to another, was not wrong. That we're just uniquely expressing life, as Reverend Cheryl likes to say, in our own kind of special. Is that it, Reverend Cheryl? It's our own kind of special that we're doing life that way, and we're supposed to. So what we see is a mirrored reflection of a similar truth, but it doesn't look like it's necessarily the same. We are interpreting because we have a certain lens that reflects in a certain way. So if I'm going to use looking glass logic, what I see is any time in my life anything feels backwards or upside down or wrong or different, that there is another way of seeing it. Okay? And that's a great, if we could train ourselves to recognize that, I believe that is the beginning of spiritual maturity. To become spiritually mature is to be aware of how you show up in the world and how you relate to life and what how your beliefs about life impact your experience of it and your relationship with everything and everyone. I had this great idea. I want to tell you about a hero in my life, but before I tell you about my hero, take just a moment and think of who's the first hero in your life. Who do you admire? Think of someone that comes to mind. Don't say it out loud. But I think it's important for us to know who our heroes are, Because as we recognize the strengths that we admire in our heroes, we strengthen those traits, those characteristics in our own being. See, we couldn't see it if we didn't have it. So as we recognize it in another, instead of making it further away from us, it makes it more familiar. And so I'm all about having heroes and being familiar with especially those traits or characteristics that draw you toward them, to draw you to admire them. So I have a hero that probably nobody will know, or I bet nobody knows. My hero is Sue Akins. Do you know her? Oh, yeah, you're just affirming that I can have her as a hero? Okay, good, good. My hero is Sue Akins, and the reason I'm pretty sure nobody else is going to know her is because she's a TV celebrity, and I have an intimate relationship with her because I watch her regularly, and I really love her, and she's on reality TV. And when I listen to you talk, most of you really trash reality TV, and what I'm here to say is some reality TV is really good. You just have to be choosy. And so when I watch reality TV, I look for something that will inform me, something that is educational, something that inspires me or gives me a sense of adventure. I'm not watching it because I'm looking for an idol to follow, but in this case, I have found that I have a hero, and she lives in Alaska, and she lives way, way up in the Arctic Circle, way north, and she lives there mostly alone all year long. And Sue Akins lives in a government, she owns the building, but she leases the land because they can't sell the land. And the whole purpose for her being there is that she runs sort of a fuel station for pilots. So she has a runway she has to maintain so that they can land and that they can fuel up. So the government provides the fuel and they do all of that stuff. And one time a year, when it's summer, so they only have a few weeks of summer there, she's so far north, she has all these, the camp is like, they look like buildings, but they're tents, they're well-structured tents, and she brings in people that pay, and she runs it sort of like a bed and breakfast. So hunters come because they want the great adventure of getting a grizzly bear or whatever they hunt. Or the birders, people that come just because the birds are so fantastic in those only few weeks of Alaska. So she cooks for them, and they live in these humble dorms, and she makes a little money, and she's really fun to watch. But why I like her is because she has substance. She got something for a woman that I really admire. And she defines herself, she calls herself an old ornery tough broad. And man, she is. She's an old ornery tough broad, and she has to be able to do everything. And so I really wanted to title this talk Pickles and Snowmobiles. Because I think last week's talk, you won't remember. But if I talk to you today about pickles and snowmobiles, guess what? You're going to remember today's message. So the reason I'm talking about snowmobiles is because she's got to be on that snowmobile a lot. She also hunts. The show is pretty graphic. She is completely self-sustained. She has to be on that snowmobile. And sometimes it breaks down. And if it breaks down, she has to be able to fix it, right? There's no one there to help her. If she throws a track, which one week happened, she has to find the way to manipulate that track back on the snowmobile so she can have transportation again. If she's there in the middle of winter and it's a blinding snowstorm and something goes wrong with the generator, does that frighten you like it does me? Imagine that. She has to go and she stakes out the rope so that she can get she'll find her way back to the little cabin, and she has to go fix the generator. Her life depends upon it. So she's got this crazy lifestyle. And things go wrong, And she gets frustrated. I love it. Whenever something goes wrong, she goes, "Son of a gun." Except they bleep out the gun part because I don't think she's really saying gun. "Son of a gun." And then she stands back. She'll pace a minute, and then you can just see the wheels turn it. Now, what am I going to do about this? How am I going to? So she doesn't quit. "See, I got this problem. If I can't do something," it's like, "Oh, it's too hard. I can't." And then that it's over. So she's a hero for me because she reminds me that I too can. That as I'm looking in the mirror or as I'm walking through this experience of whatever it is, I am in choice. And as Henry Ford said, if I think I can, I got it. If I think I can't, I don't. And that's all there is to that. You decide. We are always deciding. So her life scares me, but her life excites me. And so I like to see her get out of pickles. You know, I do. I like to see that even heroes have problems, but they do something about getting out of those pickles. Think about who you chose in your mind as your pick, as your hero. And think about the pickles that your hero probably got his or herself out of, because we all do. And that's why this is such a really, really good lesson. Sometimes I watch Sue Aikens and I go, "Wow, how'd she do that? I could never do that." And then if I get to that place where I think I couldn't do it, then the next thing I think is, why? Why would she do that? Why would she put herself up there in that dangerous situation and do all of that? Well, remember, it's because we have choices. And we are always putting ourselves in situations. And sometimes real life shows us that whether or not we have chosen to take great risks, we will encounter them. Everyday life shows me that I am faced to, I am called to face challenges I didn't expect to have to face. And so sometimes the tasks that happen in our everyday living, the tasks look kind of tricky. There are things that might scare us or just be a healthy challenge for us. But all of it is part of life. Recently, I wanted a pickle. And I was alone, and it was a brand new jar of pickles, and I couldn't get in that damn jar. And I wanted a pickle! So what happens when you have a jar? Let's use the jar as the symbol right now. Okay, we'll make it a metaphor. And you work to open that jar. It makes my hand hurt right here just telling you about it. So you work to open it. I decide I'm going to open this jar. I know I'm going to get this jar open. Can't open the jar. Son of a gun. Wait a minute. I'm not giving up. I'm going to try again. Okay, I'm ready. Try and open the jar again. But it doesn't open. Now my hand hurts, I'm feeling weaker, now I'm getting frustrated. Now I'm getting frustrated. And here's the thing, I know Karen, and I know that if Karen, I got enough, you know, of that, what do you call that stuff? Chutzpah. I got that. And that if I want a pickle, I'm going to get the damn pickle. So I try it using force. And I think we do that a lot in life. When something doesn't open easily the first time, we then try and force it. Force is brutal. We use brute force, right? It's brutal. It's our will. And if I catch myself trying to brute force through any situation to achieve an end result, if I find that I'm now brute forcing and I'm using my will, I can stop. That can be my moment of looking glass truth. And I can stop and I can put that jar down and I can remind myself, wait a minute, there's another way. Or if you're me, you might say, what would Sue Akins do? You know Sue Akins would get that pickle out of that jar. Now, the beauty of setting the jar down is that it gives me some space. So just the way Sue would say, son of a gun, and walk a couple minutes, it's like you're getting away from, you're stopping the battle. Stop fighting with whatever it is. Lay down your weapons and stand back and take a breath. Maybe even, I might even leave the kitchen. You know, I might walk out of the kitchen and then come back in and then look at those pickles and decide whether or not I really want a pickle that bad. You know, what is this all about? What's really going on right now? Right? And so think about it this way, and I'm really trying not to be silly. I'm trying to give you a really good illustration you can hopefully relate in some other way than pickles. But you now begin to have a relationship with this situation. So I say often in here that all of life, the more I study spiritual principle, I begin to see that all of life is relational. It's not just about my relationship with God. It's not just about my relationship with you. It's that all of life is relational. And what I mean by that is, as I build a relationship with a jar of pickles, what's happening is I'm creating something around the circumstance of not being able to get to the good that I desire. So if I stand there and get clear and get away from fighting with it, and step away from using my brute force or trying to will the damn jar of pickles to open up, if I get spiritually smart, I can know that there's more going on here. But if I'm really open to the bigger message, what I can do is look at my frustration and see what else is going on. Why does it frustrate me that I can't open the jar of pickles? And what I would say is, these are some old issues of mine. But these are some old issues that are in the collective consciousness of all of humanity, especially for women, that I'm not strong enough to open that jar of pickles because I'm a girl. That I don't have the strength I need to get to the good that I desire. That I'm not skilled enough, that I don't have the proper tools, because I promise you at least four people are going to come up to me after the talk this morning and tell me how to get into the pickle jar, right? But that's not what this is about. That's not what this is about. It's about me taking that looking glass moment and seeing that I have a lingering belief, and maybe I don't even have it. It's just in the consciousness, and I'm picking up on it at that moment, that I can't get to those pickles because I'm a girl. I don't have the tools, or because I'm too weak, or because I don't have a strong man in my life, or whatever your reason is. See, from a spiritually grounded position, I can look and see that nobody is holding my pickle hostage. There's no ransom note, you know, that if I want the pickle, then in that moment, that is the good that I desire. Now expand this out. Remember, I'm not talking pickles here. What is it that you want? What is it in your life that seems to have something standing between you and it? Because as Emma Curtis Hopkins, that glorious Christian mystic we're going to be studying pretty soon, as Emma says, as much as you want your good wants you, right? Because your good is your God, and your God is your good. So this is way bigger than solving a problem. This is about looking at our own beliefs. The only thing that stands between me and something else is whatever I've made up in my head, and that I continue to believe that. And so we have this glorious opportunity to start examining this stuff. What are those things that seem to stop us? Where is it in your own life where occasionally you hit the wall and you go, but I can't do that? Ah, is that true? throw a little Byron Katie in there. Is that true? Why do you think that's true? What else could be possible? And what would it feel like to have that pickle or that good that you are craving or desiring? So when you find yourself in a position like that, here's what I want to say to you. And you're going to remember this. It's like the pickle jar. At some point, brute force doesn't work. Hear the looking glass words of truth in your mind. Put the pickle jar down. Take a step back. Take a breath. Create some space to see what else is possible. Because in my case, there's always an open jar of olives in the fridge that I'd probably rather have anyhow. But nothing can keep you from your good. And so that's sort of where I like to go. I get in the pickle. I get myself in a corner somehow. And I start practicing using these skills, these tools that we talk about all the time here. And I remember, wait a minute, Karen, what do you believe? And you know what I believe? In the words of Unity Minister Gary Simmons, I believe that there can be nothing and no one against me. Because in God, all things are possible. God is my good. Spirit itself is a power that is greater than I am, and I can use it. I can tap into that power at any time. And you know what? I always get that jar of pickles open. If I want it, I'll get it. And so can you. Life is always reflecting back to us whatever it is we believe. And the spiritual path is provided so that we can start looking at those beliefs and thereby have a greater experience in our living. Can you imagine how that delights the Creator? That we would live fully and we would live largely and that we would claim the good that is ours. Because it's freely given. Here's a quote from the book, This Thing Called You, also from Dr. Holmes. This is a favorite of most ministers and practitioners, the book, This Thing Called You. We can hardly keep them stocked. Life is a mirror reflecting your images of thought. If you see confusion, don't blame the law of reflection. Don't even blame yourself. Rather, acknowledge that the confusion is a reflection in your own mind. Learn to sit with it. Learn to reaffirm your position in life, and you will see the change. I want us to see today that this philosophy, this teaching is a philosophy that we can use in every situation. Pickles, snowmobiles, whatever it is. Now, can this teaching help you get a pickle out of a jar? I don't know. But I think it can help us get ourselves out of all sorts of pickles in life. So I think about it like this. So there's an action. Try and open the jar. Result, I got nothing. That then creates a thought. I have an opinion. And that opinion and thought create a feeling that starts now to validate my beliefs that I'm not sure I've looked at carefully enough. So I create another action. Maybe it's opening the jar. Maybe I'm ready to quit already. Whatever it is, it's just reflecting what's going on. I create an action. I try and get the jar open again. Same result. Right? Sore wrist, weaker, feeling weaker. Creates another thought, creates more emotion. I, as a skilled practitioner of this teaching, begin to notice the emotions. What is emoting within us is an inward movement that then, when we consciously use it in a positive way, changes the outward result. And so I begin to apply principle. I stop, I look in the mirror. In that mirror of life, that reflection of life, what's going on in my life, and I notice that whatever I believe right now in this moment is going to determine the outcome of whatever that task is. Do you follow that? we're always in choice. There's always something delicious right there waiting. So I just want to add that I think the part about where Holmes says, sit for a minute, how did he word that? He said, learn to sit with it, learn to reaffirm your position in life. I think that's that place where you step back and you sort of reassess what's going on. And you know what I think is going on in that moment? I would say that that's curiosity. We now have put aside the brute force, and we've become curious as to what else we might do, how else we might approach this situation. And what I was thinking was that in curiosity, just think about it, it's a whole different vibration. There is no force in curiosity because it's a gift. It's a gift that creates space, and forgive the pun, but it's an opening. It opens us. Now we're on to something. Sue Aiken's My Hero reminds me that I can do anything. And so I want to leave you with a quote. I thought the last words I want to speak in the message this morning should be this tremendously perfect quotation taken from the Course in Miracles. Perception is a mirror, not a fact. What I look upon is my own state of mind reflected outward. When I see through the eyes of Christ, I bless the world by my looking. And so take a breath. Sit down the jar. And let's move our mood and our attitude and this atmosphere that we've created. Let's move to the words of prayer. I would like to invite all the practitioners and ministers to rise and to surround the room, please. How good it is to remember again that there is no place that God is not. Right here, in this very room, I recognize that something stirs. It is a power. It is a presence. It is the love of God, and I feel it within me. And I recognize it in every person sitting in the sanctuary. I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is that activity of life, that movement of perfection. It is that very vital truth that there is the presence of the divine in every element of this thing called life. It is in our physical bodies. It is that very instinct to breathe. It is that which circulates the blood through our body. It's that which heals our wounds and it mends our broken spirit when we are sad. It is that force for good. In fact, love is the greatest force in all the universe. It is the givingness of all the goodness that flows and moves and lives and breathes everywhere around us. I feel the love of God, and I know that there is something magnificent happening in this room, in this very moment, that we open ourselves to be vessels, to be filled up with this outpouring of grace. It is the grace of God. It is freely given. And we allow that sense of fullness to just wash over us so that we know everything we need, we already have. That all the good that we desire is already ours. That nothing can stand between us and our good. And so whatever it is that feels missing or lacking, we simply know that there are no walls, there are no limitations. There is simply this way that we wake up every day, and this manna is lying on the ground waiting for us to gather it so that we can be revived, that we can be nurtured, that we can be nourished, that we can heal from anything that appears to ail us. Because indeed there is that divine element of truth, and we stand in that looking glass of truth to recognize that even that which feels different is the same, is still filled and overflowing with good in every way, that there is, no matter what the appearance, there is something magnificent revealing itself. And so if there is a concern in our lives for loved ones that we may be worried over, we simply know that the presence of God and intelligence and that infinite wisdom is right where they are. That same healing force of love is there. And if it is something going on in our own personal life, we just open ourselves even now to become that which receives, to become that container, to become that beautiful reflection of the perfection of life so that others may witness and experience the same. I say thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit. I just feel that depth of gratitude moving through my being, a quickening that appreciates upon noticing. And so in this day, knowing it has been completely and fully given, that we have accepted, that we have appreciated, I simply release the words of this prayer, this time spent together, into that divine law that always responds affirmatively, and together we say, and so it is. Amen. Amen.